Today's program is brought to you by Happy Chef Uniforms, the perfect style, whatever your recipe. Visit happychef.com to order your free 2018 catalog.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and we are coming to you live from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It is Wednesday, May 16th, 2018. This is the 176th episode of the series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is one of America's most respected and celebrated restaurateurs, and I will introduce him fully in a moment. First, as I do on every show, I will start out with my PR tip, and then later we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to have high standards. Expect the best and never settle for less. Surround yourself with exceptional people and treat others the way you want to be treated. Success comes from setting the bar high and always working to improve and be better. So reach for the stars. Greatness can't be achieved without putting forth the best effort. That's my tip today. Now, I am thrilled and honored to have my guest here with me in the studio. It is Drew Nieporant. He is a legendary restaurateur who is the founder and inspiration behind the Myriad Restaurant Group, which includes Tribeca Grill, Nobu Downtown, Nobu 57, Nobu London, and Batard. Over the last 30 years, Myriad has opened and operated over 39 restaurants around the world. Drew's restaurants have earned numerous accolades, from his first restaurant, the groundbreaking Montrachet, which received 3 stars from the New York Times and kept the rating for 21 years, to Batard, which also earned 3 stars in the New York Times, as well as in New York Magazine, plus a Michelin star, and the James Beard Award for Best New Restaurant in 2015. And there's a lot more in the middle that's happened, and we're going to get into it. So, hello, welcome, Drew.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Good to have you.
Yes.
So, I always like to start my show off with finding out how people got into the industry and what you're doing today. And from the little I know about your background, I read that you always knew you wanted to be a restaurateur. Is that true?
I think so. I grew up... Very middle class in New York City, Peter Cooper Village, Stuyvesant Town area. And my mother was an actress, and mostly on radio.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Even before television. And my father was an attorney with the State Liquor Authority, which licenses restaurants. So as a young kid, my father had a way of getting the application from the bottom of the pile to the top of the pile. So for that, the restaurateurs were very thankful to him. And they used to invite him to bring his family to their place. And over the course of many years, actually, we ate at all kinds of great New York restaurants in the 60s, French, Italian, German, Chinese. And I took to it. Just immediately. I loved it. I obviously loved the food, but I also loved the theater. Mm-hmm. I basically decided that it would be something I would want to, do for a living.
Right. So you went to Cornell and studied hospitality? Well,
the Cornell thing, it's very interesting because I went to high school at Stuyvesant High School, which is a very good high school in New York City.
My nephew is currently at Stuyvesant.
Oh, very good.
Yes.
Well, now, there was a one of the mothers basically, and they knew that I was interested in food, and they said, so Drew should apply to the Cornell School of Hotel Administration. And you know, my mother came home and she said, you know, why did you apply to Cornell? I said, Mom, it's an Ivy League school. Even though you know, I'm going to Stuyvesant High School, I think my grade point average put me in the bottom 500 of the students there. But I applied and I got in, and I wound up going to Cornell in the early 70s, and it was a great experience. I went all 4 years, and but you know, you need work experience, mm-hmm. To supplement the theoretical. So you know, during the summers and during the Christmas vacations, I worked on a cruise ship. I worked at Maxwell's Plum, which was one of the great New York restaurants in the 70s. And then when I graduated, I didn't have a job. So, you know, I went back working on the cruise ships again. It took me around the world. And I was offered a job eventually back at the Tavern on the Green. Oh, actually, the owner of Tavern on the Green was Warner Leroy, who was in the process of opening the Tavern on the Green, reopening the Tavern on the Green. So I graduated in 77, and in 1978 went to work at Tavern on the Green in the middle of Central Park.
Yeah, that had to have been an incredible experience.
Yeah, that you know, the Tavern on the Green, we would, on a Saturday night, we'd do somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,500 covers.
Right.
Go to sleep and come back and do 1,700 brunches.
So, it's incredible.
Yeah, see 3,000 people in less than a day. So, yeah, it was amazing proving grounds. You know, like when you're in the restaurant business, you're challenged. If you're managing a large group of people, you're challenged with, you know, can you do it? Can you get their respect, or do you know enough where you can, you know, when you give somebody something to do and they decide they're going to do it willingly. So, you know, the Tavern on the Green was just a tremendous experience.
And so how did you come, probably jumping ahead a little, but how did you come to open Montrachet and start on your own, and also down in Tribeca, which was a different neighborhood then than it is now?
Well, you know, New York, first of all, my classmates, you know, what are you going to do when you graduate from college? You know, I'm going to open my own restaurant. But saying that that's what you're going to do and doing it are two different things. So, you know, I spent about 3.5 years at Tavern on the Green, and I realized, you know, I just wasn't having the opportunity to. I hadn't found the space. I had no money. Mm-hmm. I basically couldn't open my own restaurant. I went to work for a couple of French restaurants, Le Perigord, La Reserve, right. La Grenouille, and
the La Laz restaurants.
Right. And then I was jogging, and this area below Canal Street, you know, very sleepy neighborhood. And I used to wake up. I used to read the on Sundays, the New York Times business opportunities. And lo and behold, there was a little classified, I mean, not more than a 2 or 3 liner that said 1,500 square feet on West Broadway available $1,500 a month. So I was like, well, I can afford $1,500 a month. West Broadway is a big thoroughfare in Soho. But when I took a look at the space, I realized it was on the other side of Canal Street, which is Tribeca, mm-hmm. And you know, back in the early 80s, that was really in, you know, there wasn't a lot going on, let's put it that way.
Right.
But I saw the space, and $1,500 a month, I could afford that. That was $50 a day. And with very little money, actually, I tried to raise money. I couldn't raise any money, so I basically used my money, a partner's money, and then my mother. And with about $150,000, we opened Montrachet in April of 1985. And with a little-known chef by the name of David Boulay. You know, and the amazing thing then was we charged $16 for dinner. That's 1/6. And 7 weeks. It was a very fast, but 7 weeks after we opened, we got 3 stars from the New York Times. And it was the equivalent of winning the lottery without being able to collect the cash. I mean, it was an out-of-body experience. We could have filled the stadium. I mean, $16. I mean, you know, that's the price of an entree, or actually it's less, it's the price of an appetizer today. But you could have 3 courses, and David Boulay's food was beautiful, and the name of the restaurant, obviously, was Morochet. It was inspired by the great white Burgundy, and, you know, so the stars lined up, and it, that restaurant basically lasted about 22 years, so it's a pretty good run.
Incredible. And then you took that, or you continued to develop restaurants, very successful restaurants, in Tribeca.
Right.
Like, how did Tribeca Grill come about?
Well, you know, there was a time when Lower Manhattan was the low-rent district.
not anymore.
Not anymore. But Robert De Niro actually was one of our customers. And he would, you know, he'd sit in the back and, you know, just basically very quiet, kept to himself. But his girlfriend was a vivacious woman by the name of Tookie Smith, Willie Smith's sister, the designer Willie Smith of WillieWare. And one day she goes, "Bob wants to know if you'd like to open another restaurant in Tribeca." And I was like, "Are you talking to me? There's nobody else here." No, I mean, it was like, wow, Robert De Niro wants to open a restaurant. And so and I said, "Well, why don't you show me what you're talking about?" And we walked up the block to where the Tribeca Grill is today, 28 years ago. We opened in 1990. And, you know, I asked him what his vision was, and, you know, he mumbled something, you know what I'm saying? You know, but we put it together. With the help of Sean Penn, Bill Murray, Lou Diamond Phillips, Ed Harris, Christopher Walken, Harvey Weinstein.
This is like a movie.
Yeah, but
cast.
Anyway, so it was, it was like, yeah, it was a. And we got a terrific New York Times review. We got 2 stars in 1990. And it's a pony we've been riding for 28 years.
It's so impressive. I mean, having worked with many restaurants, and just it's such a tough business. I mean, to have that longevity is
it's a really, well, first of all, the, you know, Morochet, of course, I still have. It's 33 years later.
Batard.
Yeah, now it's Batard. And then we even opened in San Francisco. Yeah, you know, there was a time when I had one restaurant, but then we opened Tribeca Grill in 1990. And then in 1994, we did a project out in the Hamptons. We did East Hampton Point and Della Femina out there, and that was a good experience. And then it was off to the races. You know, we did a bunch of things. We consulted for W Hotels, and we did a bunch of W's around the United States, and we did a project in Boca Raton. We did something in Martha's Vineyard. We did something in Nantucket. We did something in Washington. We did a lot of stuff.
And a little restaurant empire now that's called Nobu.
Oh, yeah.
That one.
Yeah.
How could
I forget?
I don't know.
For a second, I was like, oh, and then.
Oh, yeah, that little thing.
Well, you know, Nobu, I think, is probably one of the, you know, like, it changed everything. It was a game changer for, certainly for Nobu. We opened in 1994, very humbly. The space at 105 Hudson Street, we had no front bar. We didn't open with a liquor license. And, I mean, it got 3 stars, but more importantly, it really changed the way people eat in America.
Absolutely.
You know, it was a game changer. Today, there's 38 Nobus around the world, and there's Nobu hotels, and There's a lot of Nobus.
And three of them are your partners with now?
Yeah, I mean, it's a long story. Yeah. Nobu and the two Nobus in New York are unbelievable.
And you just, you relocated to downtown.
Well, yeah, we currently, the first Nobu was opened in 1994, and we ran that for 24 years until we were unceremoniously, New York today is, the rents around New York are incredibly high.
Yeah.
And we were paying a premium rent, and then I think our lease was going to be up, and they wanted to raise the rent, and we just, I think my partners had already had a discussion with a different landlord, and they gave us a good deal. And so we have a brand new facility. We just celebrated our first anniversary about a month ago.
Oh, wow, that went quick.
Yeah, it was very fast.
And it's beautiful space.
Yeah, beautiful. It's spectacular. David Rockwell has collaborated with me on quite a number of projects, but mm-hmm. he was the originator of Nobu, the first Nobu. Back in 1994 was a game changer for David Rockwell.
Right.
I mean, it really was. So, and he's done, this particular Nobu is just spectacular. We have two distinct environments, the bar room and the main dining room, and people love it.
Yeah, I was down there. I loved it. I'm due to go back. It's such a beautiful space.
Well,
really.
The most amazing thing is that the chef of Nobu is the same chef. In other words, Ricky Estrellato, he originally worked as an intern at Morishe. He became the chef in 1994, and he's still with us. It does say a lot for consistency anyway.
Yeah. And we're going to take a break, but I apologize that I don't think I say the name correctly of, I say Montrachet. It's not right.
You know, you can say Montrachet, you can say Morachet. The French.
I don't speak French. I wish I did. I would say it more beautifully if I did. But
there you go.
On that note, let's take a little break, and we're going to come back and talk more with Drew, so stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Maybe you're looking for a coat for yourself, or you want a bold look for your staff. You might even need a new style for your restaurant, whether it's modern, industrial, or farm to table. Whatever you're looking for, Happy Chef has got you covered. Their wide variety of chef apparel and products are perfect for teams of all sizes and styles. And with the industry's easiest custom embroidery, you can add your logo, name, or fun artwork to many of their other products in minutes. Here's what you do. Visit happychef.com and choose from their incredible selection. With only a couple clicks, you can customize many of their products to personalize your look. Right now, they're even offering free custom logo setup on all orders over $150, a $95 value totally free. Visit happychef.com now to order your free 2018 catalog featuring new styles and incredible comfort. Happy Chef. The perfect style, whatever your recipe.
And we're back. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Drew Nieporant. He's the founder and owner of Myriad Restaurant Group. We just got through talking about pretty much your restaurant empire.
Well, you know, the one thing we didn't talk about, I also own a wine store.
Oh, yeah.
On 57th Street between 3rd and Lex called Crush. And we opened that about 10 years ago, and that's doing fantastically.
It's crushing it.
It's crushing it. But, wine in restaurants and wine in America in general, back when we opened Morishe, in restaurants, especially New York restaurants, American wines never had their place with French wines. They were sort of a distant cousin. And so we had parity when we first opened Montrachet. And basically, Montrachet spawned some of the top sommeliers in the city, I think, to the point where in 1994, we opened Rubicon in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And Larry Stone was our sommelier out there. He was previous to Rubicon, he was working with Charlie Trotter.
I was about to say that because I worked at Trotter's back in 97, 98.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and fantastic. I think he had just left, or like I knew of him, but I didn't really cross with him.
Yeah, with us back then.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Rubicon in San Francisco, that was an amazing experience for us. It's the biggest charity I ever gave to, essentially, because it's a communist country, California.
That's a different show.
I thought it was going to be, like New York, but I didn't realize that the wages, even then, were almost twice as much as they are in New York. And we own the space, but we sold the building in the middle of the lease, and we made a bad deal, so the rent was pretty crazy. But we were there 14 years. It's a pretty long time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So how do you manage your time with all these restaurants and projects and openings and, like...
You know, basically every day is different. There's no 2 days. I don't have a set schedule. I come to work at different hours.
Right.
First of all, I live outside the city, so I have to... make amends for traffic, and just coming in like that is always a pain in the butt. But there's a lot of things going on now, and I go where I feel I'm most needed. I do a lot of travel as well. I tend to go to the West Coast on occasion. I go to a lot of the festivals. I go to Aspen and South Beach, and I'm kind of a perennial at some of these events. But and then we have our own event in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, over the years I've invited quite a number of chefs to partake in both the events that we ourselves create.
Right. What's your take on social media and how and the industry today? Because you've been in the game a long time, and that's a whole new aspect to restaurants.
It's unbelievable. It's incalculable. If it was available to us early on, social media was available, I can't imagine, because we had the Zagat survey. We had this red book that had a paragraph about your restaurant, and that was about it. There were fewer restaurants. But today, because of the social media, you're able to see things in different parts of the world. I can't even say in different parts of the United States, because it's really the world.
Yeah.
And depending on how you've networked, you're seeing things in such rapid... There's so much information. Now, as a consumer, it's fantastic. You get to see the place, you get to see the menu, you know what the prices are. In the old days, you basically, you'd be looking in the window, and to see if you could, is this going to be a nice place for a special occasion, or can you afford the prices? Or I remember when there was something called Epicurean Rendezvous, and they had a picture of the interior of the restaurant. That was like mind-boggling. You can actually see the place. It's endless. I mean, you can use it to market. You can use it to do all sorts of things.
Yeah, it's definitely different now. I mean, you can look and see what dishes look like before you order them.
Right.
I mean, it's pretty incredible.
Well, that's very true. It's actually... I think it's a rare occasion if the restaurant isn't for you, then you'll see something and you say, whoa, that doesn't really look that good.
Right.
So you sort of have to be careful, I think.
Yeah, true.
Yeah,
true.
Yeah.
So I have a bunch of questions from you from my previous guest.
Okay.
So, because we did a little reschedule. So I'm going to ask you all these questions because they're good questions.
Okay.
So on episode 173, I had on Eric Bruner Yang. He's a DC-based chef and owner of Foreign National, which includes restaurants Makato, Brothers and Sisters, and Spoken English. So he wants to know if you had the opportunity to reopen Cortone, as it was the first year, would you do it?
Yeah, I don't like to go backwards, so I wouldn't necessarily want to reopen something right. I've already done. But I mean, Cortone was a great experience. You know, people know how difficult Paul Liebrandt is, and they have this image that he and I were like fighting all the time. But the reality was, we were there for 6 years together. We got 2 Michelin stars. We got 3 stars from the New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
And it really worked.
The documentary, too.
And the documentary. Mm-hmm. So it really worked. Paul is his own worst enemy. You know, it's hard to explain. And then also, you know, Paul's food is so, so styled.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, is that of the moment? You know, basically, you know, things change and nobody taps you on the shoulder and says, oh, by the way, you're not in style anymore. And, you know, when you're not in style, you're not in style. And so you have to, you know, food is, it's like where we are today. You know, we went through a period where the guest was a guinea pig. We tried everything out on them, but they didn't mind it so much because they were learning things themselves. Now the guest is very knowledgeable and they want what they want. And you sort of have to give them what they want. Or they're basically, they gravitate to something that's very straightforward, simple, and good.
Yeah, well, that's a perfect segue into Eric's second question, okay. Which was, he wants to know, for a chicken club sandwich, would you prefer fried chicken, grilled chicken, or deli chicken salad?
I think you call it club sandwich. The choices are deli, like the chop with mayonnaise,
mm-hmm.
fried chicken, and what's the
grilled.
Let's go with the chicken salad.
All right.
You know, it's, you know, basically, I think that's what that works for me.
Okay. Now I have one question from my guest on episode 175. I had on Nick Lavanos and his 2 sons, Johnny and Enrico of the Lavanos Restaurant Group.
How old are his sons?
They're in their 20s. I didn't get the exact age, but they're both managing Usia, which is their new restaurant over on 57th at the Via 57 building, cool triangle building.
Well, I got to check it out.
So restaurateur to restaurateur, he wants to know, what are we going to do if we no longer have the tip credit in the industry? Will you become service included in your pricing?
You know, I think Danny Meyer jumped the gun on the, no more tipping.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, when the wages go all the way up, something's got to give. And because we can't keep rewarding waiters, you know, like the price of the entrees goes up, the wages are going to go up. They're going to get the same money that we're paying people in the back of the house. They're going to get in the front of the house. So there's something that we have to do. So we've tried to talk about the surcharge, which allows us to add something to the bill in order to spread the wealth mm-hmm. amongst all the employees. But I think ultimately the waiter's going to get screwed. I think that ultimately there'll be just something where the waiters just don't make the gratuities anymore. So the culture right now is tipping.
Mm-hmm.
And it might take a little bit longer, but I think ultimately we're all going to have to. See, it works when everyone does it. So Danny Meyer did it. He did it. Some people tried to do it. It didn't work.
Right.
But if we all do it, it's going to. Obviously, it will work.
Okay.
I think.
So stay tuned to see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So Let's take another break here, and we're going to come back, and we're going to play my speed round game, which is always fun, and talk some industry news. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Hey, Food Radio listeners. I'm HRN's Executive Director, Katie, and I'm really excited to share that we're launching a brand new show. Meat and Three is HRN's weekly food news roundup. Tune in for a deep dive and three tasty shorts every Friday evening. It's 15 minutes, so you can listen while you wait for your pizza. This week, the fight for universal free lunch in New York City public schools isn't over yet.
I'm overburdened. I'm overworked. I don't get staff when people are out.
Plus, Dana Cowan, former editor of Food & Wine magazine and host of HRN's Speaking Broadly, catches up with Valerie Lomas, the winner of the Great American Baking Show's Derailed Season 3. Discover how a Danish brewery is motivating people to get fit, and hear Allison Roman speak to the highs and lows of her cookie recipe going viral.
Every time I see anyone in a social setting, that's generally the first thing they ask me is, how are the cookies?
Be better informed and wildly inspired by the stories and people you hear on Meat and Three. Find us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.
And we're back. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Drew Nieporant. It's time for my speed round game. So what this is I name a couple of things, and you pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Oh, eat out.
Wine, beer, cocktail, or mocktail?
A wine.
Tasting menu or a la carte? Small plates or large plates?
I like large plates.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Neither. Just my
really?
my own table.
Okay.
Okay.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
Tipping.
Beard or no beard?
That's a good one.
I noticed it's back.
Yeah, it's back for a number of reasons, but no beard is better.
Okay. I posted a picture without the beard. I figured it was gone. Now I have to post one with it.
That is.
How about being the first at the party or the last to leave?
Always the first at the party.
You're always the first at the party. I know.
Always the first.
I'm always impressed that you're always the first.
Yeah.
Two more. Cheese plate or dessert?
Cheese plate.
Manhattan or Brooklyn?
Oh, Manhattan. No question. No question. Oh, where are we? Brooklyn?
Wow. Well, that was the game. That was so quick.
That was a fast one.
You got the speed.
I got the speed. I make quick decisions, actually.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's...
decisive.
Yeah. Well, that's probably, I think, has helped with your success and your getting so much done.
I hope so. You know, it's funny you say that because we had a pretty big decision in one of the restaurants, and I was here for lunch today, and they called me up, and I made my decision. Then they called me back to make me want to change a decision, but I didn't change it.
Oh, funny.
Yeah.
They thought after maybe a little pizza.
After I might second guess myself.
Okay. But. So, industry news. I just picked out an article that was on Bloomberg by Kate Crater, and the title is High-End Restaurants Are Turning to Retail to Bring in Additional Cash, saying fancy ice tongs and kaftans order up. So she's, you know, speaking to this trend. There's like La Marcerie that just opened downtown. That's there. It's not only a beautiful space, but you can purchase the beautiful china and even the flowers and everything that you are seeing and using to enjoy your meal. Right. So what's your take on this? Are you any plans to open a restaurant where you can buy things?
You know. When people hear an idea like that, and it sounds really good, what I think about is where the hell am I going to put everything? In other words, restaurants, we pay for space. Mm-hmm. We never have enough of it. And now suddenly we're going to be inventorying, you know, like all these different things. It's hard. I mean, I don't understand it. It's actually a different business entirely, I think. Eataly, I mean, you know, it's... When that opened on 23rd Street, I was like, oh my God, they're going to fail so big. Oh, this is going to be a disaster. And they've hit a home run. So
not failed.
It's really a different business. And then, I'm not turned on by selling, you know, the tabletop. That doesn't do anything for me. So it's not the way I would supplement my income. Let's put it that way.
Right.
Well, I mean, you know, people just steal. You know, they won't take, you know. Oh, why should we buy
spoon.
That? Well, we could steal
yeah,
it.
Yeah, well, they shouldn't do that. But, I mean, I've been to La Mercerie, and everything is beautiful and precious
yeah.
and expensive, too. I mean, they tell you what the plates and everything costs. There were a few other things, places in the article she talked about in San Francisco, how Quince is opening a place called Verju. That's going to also sell items. And in D.C., Masserie is opening Officina on the wharf. And Jimmy Yu, who had came on my show, is designing that place. So,
yeah. I found, Kate Crater is terrific. She's always in the know. It was a very good article. But when I read it, I was like, okay, that's a different business. It's not my business.
Yeah. No, it's true with the inventory and thinking of that. And I wonder how much...
Because unless it's under lock and key, you know, somebody's going to take it. It's just, it's crazy to think that way. But unfortunately, that's the restaurant business.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's sad.
it is sad.
Or even I think about, I don't know, I've heard stories about how things go missing from the bathroom, whether it's the soap a painting on the wall or right. whatever it is, and that people just feel they can take things.
Yes, they feel.
So, anyways, we'll see if this becomes more of a thing. Eataly certainly has been super successful in their model.
But the nicer it is, the more that someone's going to want to nick it. And so I can't imagine. I mean, it's just, you know, we have enough to think about in the restaurant business than to worry about, you know, is it available? You know, I'd just be worried all the time.
Which isn't good.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah.
So we won't see this from the Marriott restaurant group anytime soon.
No.
All right. And we're going to take one more break, come back, I'm going to do my solo dining experience, and then we'll have the final question. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Great. Hey, like what you hear? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. With fresh programming every week, we've got something for everyone. Trying to start your own food business? Concerned about where your food comes from? Looking for the best wine or beer to bring to a party? Find our shows on iTunes or Stitcher, or head to heritageradionetwork.org to listen live and subscribe to our newsletter.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. It's time for my solo dining experience. This week, it's at Raoul's. Here's the rundown. The location, 180 Prince Street, Soho, New York City. The concept, classic bistro dating back to the 1970s with a bustling Parisian atmosphere and serious French menu. The owners, the Alsatian brothers, Serge and Guy Raoul. So why did I go? Because I had been in the neighborhood, and I was hungry, and I was due for a revisit. I hadn't been there in quite some time. So my experience. I arrived around 7 o'clock, and the hostess helped me secure the last seat that was available at the bar. I felt lucky to get it. And then there were three guys who were sitting next to me, and they were all having the burger that just came out as soon as I sat down. So I immediately knew what I had to get. I had to get this burger. And the bartender was great, took good care of me. I'd asked him how long he had worked there, because I could tell he had been there a long time, and he said 18 years, which I figured was a very good run. So, as I said, what did I get? I had the burger. It's an au poivre burger with a pepper-crusted patty, dressed with watercress, triple cream Saint-André cheese, fries, and has au poivre sauce on the side for dipping. Now, they only make 12 of these a night, and you can only get it at the bar. So that's why I had to get it at the bar, and apparently I got the last one they had for the night. I also had a club soda to drink. So my take, it was delicious. It was as good as they say, and it was awesome dipping the burger into this sauce. Really quite delicious. So the ambiance, it's kind of dark and sexy. It has this bohemian atmosphere. It's comfortable and familiar, and they had a great soundtrack. I'd say it's perfect for solo dining at the bar or date night if you dine in one of the dining rooms. Interesting tidbit, the restaurant has always attracted a cool celebrity crowd, and it has a spiral staircase that goes up to the bathrooms, and up there they have a fortune teller who will do card readings for you, and they've always had that. I remembered it from many years ago, and there was a woman up there. Personal fun fact, so the first time I went to Raoul's was, I don't know, when I first moved to New York, like 15, 16 years ago, and I remember I was on a date, and I was in the back garden area, which is beautiful. And I was impressed that my date had picked the place, but I don't know what happened because I never got a second date out of that. So that's why I had to go back solo. Anyways, the cost was $31, not including tax and gratuity. It's a $27 burger. It's expensive, but I think it's worth it. Would I go back? Yes. The website is Raoul's.com.
Good one.
Good one? Yeah. You like that? You've been to Raoul's
lately? I haven't been there. I haven't been there in probably 20 years. But it's been there for many years.
It really has. Yeah. No, it's, I mean, yeah, almost as long as you.
Almost as long as me. Nobody's as old as I am.
No, that's not true. Okay, so it's time for the final question. My next guest is Jody Eddy. Jody is a cookbook author, a journalist. She's a food conference organizer. She does culinary tours. She's a recipe developer. She's a whiz. And she's good people. So, Drew, what would you like to ask Jody?
Yeah, I'd like to, let's see, what do I want to ask Jody? Something, if maybe she can create a recipe for a dish that, you know, something for Thanksgiving. That's not turkey. I'm trying to think.
Chicken salad? Or are we back to that?
Oh, we're back to the three chicken salads. Jody, think of something for Thanksgiving that you can serve somebody who hates turkey.
Okay. I bet she's going to come up with a brilliant answer for that.
Sure, I'm sure.
I mean, she's done a lot of cookbooks. She did North with Gunnar from who was a restaurant in Iceland. Now he is Agurn at Grand Central. That's one of the books she collaborated on.
Oh,
she wrote
nice.
A book on Cuba recently. She's done a lot of various projects, and it will be interesting to hear about her career too. But I'm sure she's going to have a great answer for that.
Okay.
So
it was really lame, but other than that,
no, it was good. It was very good. So that's the show.
I had a great time. Thank you for having me.
I had a great time. Thank you for taking the time to come out here
to
Brooklyn.
That was a short story, by the way, but it's okay. I'm joking.
Oh, okay.
my career takes hours. But
well, you did. We could have talked for a few days.
We got it in.
You did get it in. It's impressive, everything you've done, and I'm glad to know you and just... thank you for coming on my show and being a part of my life.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
So congratulations. I look forward to seeing what's next for you. I know there's going to be something more.
Well, you never know.
You do never know. But thank you. And for my listeners, my guest today has been Drew Nieporant. He's the founder and owner of Myriad Restaurant Group. That includes Tribeca Grill, Nobu Downtown, Nobu 57, Nobu London, and Batard. They're all fantastic. You should go to all of them if you haven't already. And he also has Crush Wine and Spirits, where you can get your...
wonderful wine store.
Your wines in Manhattan. His website's MyriadRestaurantGroup.com and social media at Myriad Restaurants. And Drew is on Instagram at Drew Nieporant. You can find me on all social media channels at Sherry Bayer, at Bayer PR, at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry, and my websites, BayerPublicRelations.com and SherryBayer.com. All of our shows are archived at heritageradionetwork.org. We are also on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. Thanks again to my guest today, Drew. Thanks to my engineer, Vitor. I'm Sherry Bayer. I will be back next week with another live show. I hope you'll tune in then, and thank you for being part of All in the Industry. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.